The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey guys, welcome to another edition of the podcast. Before we get into the episode, I wanted to give a big shout out to all our Patreon supporters. You guys rock. I just completed a new video for a show called This Old Rock T-Shirt. It's up on the Talking Metal YouTube page and, of course, talkingrock.net. And all you Patreon dudes get a special thanks at the end of that video. So definitely watch for your name on that. Of course, I did edit it a week or so ago, so I know we had some new people join us. And you guys won't be in the credit roll, but next video, we'll get you in for sure. I know we had Sam join us and Drake, the Graveyard Disciple, Matt, Carol. So thank you, guys. Three new guys on Patreon. And love the Ron Keel comments on Patreon. He is so great. All you other guys are awesome, too. Watch for your name at the end of This Old Rock T-shirt on YouTube.com/Talking Metal. We got a great show. We're hyping M3 on this show. I cannot wait for M3. And I also just wanted to mention the show was recorded a while ago. I was actually going to do it as a bonus episode last week, but I didn't have time to edit it. So it's just a normal episode this Tuesday. And yeah, man. So that's why we're talking about the Super Bowl. I know the Super Bowl was well over a week ago at this point, so sorry to put a dated episode up, but it's still good. Check it out. And let's check out Marty Friedman at one of my favorite clubs in New Jersey. It's called Crossroads in Garwood, New Jersey, on 78 North Avenue. We're going down to check out Marty Friedman next week. I hope you join us. It's going to be just a fantastic night. It is February 23rd, Saturday night. You cannot go wrong. Meet Emily and I down at Crossroads to experience one of the greatest guitar players ever, Marty Friedman. Cannot wait for that one. And we will also see you at M3 this year. Cannot wait to get down there. Let's do this. Here is a brand new episode of Talking Metal.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and anything else we feel like. We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started. Here's an old classic that sounds just as good today as it did when we were kids.
You know.
Hey guys, thanks for joining us here on another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast. We got a fire going. We're sitting in our living room in the afternoon.
This is our first
we haven't
fire.
Started drinking yet, which
wow.
is
yeah. yeah. We're going to a party.
Yeah.
We're going to a party at a neighbor's house, so we need to those people drink. So
yeah.
I think we need to take it easy right now and
yeah.
try and keep up with them later on.
Definitely, definitely. So looking forward to that. That's coming up in a little bit. It is the Saturday before the Super Bowl. We were invited to a Super Bowl party, which was canceled. So I don't know what we're going to do.
Seriously, let's just have a party.
Yeah. Maybe we'll just invite some friends over.
Wait, who's playing here. Halftime is going to be awful. Isn't it Maroon 5?
I don't know. Foo Fighters are doing something, but I don't know if that's like
oh, really?
Something separate.
So
yeah, I don't think it's
them,
the actual halftime thing.
I heard something about Maroon 5 and I was just like, oh God.
I have no clue. No clue. But I'll tell you one thing that is going to be a party, M3, the M3 Rock Festival.
Cannot
Emily
wait.
And I are so excited. And we have Keith from the band Tora on the podcast today. We're going to talk about their upcoming M3 performance. We're going to talk about their brand new record, which sounds great. Keith's going to tell us all about it. And, Tora, Eric Baker, the producer of the festival, told me that they do exit polling at M3. That's how engaged they are with the fans. And the fans, one of the most requested bands to have on the festival was Tora. So
they have a hardcore fan base.
Yeah, they really
sure.
do. And we're going to talk to Keith about that. And I am so excited to hang with Keith and the guys in Tora at this year's M3 festival. It's just going to be an incredible event with some great, great bands. Emily, why don't you go through some of the ones we're gonna see at M3?
I mean, well, hello, Whitesnake. They always put on such a great show. Bang Tango, Danger, Autograph. Firehouse. Who else do we have? Quiet Riot, LA Guns, Kix. Oh my God, Kix is always a blast. Skid Row. Who did I miss? Steven Adler is going to be there.
Playing Heaven's Guns N' Roses songs.
Kingdom Come. Oh, Vince Neil and Vixen and Warrant.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Yeah, it is a really incredible lineup this year. It really is. And so we are looking forward to that. We're going to talk to Keith about M3 and about the state of Tora in just a bit. And I want to mention the song that we played coming into the episode was Bad Boys by Whitesnake, who will also be at M3. And on that song, Neil Murray on the bass. Now, Neil is known for Whitesnake, but he also did some work with Black Sabbath. And he is a part of the new Emerald Sabbath album, which is about to come out. And we're going to talk to the producer of that record, the guy who put this all together. Ron Keel's a part of it. Vinny Appice, Adam Wakeman from Ozzy's band is on it. It's a Sabbath tribute, but it's people who all had a hand in the history of Black Sabbath. And it is a really cool project. So stay tuned for that interview with Michael. He's going to tell us all about the Emerald Sabbath project. Right now, here's some classic Tora. This is Guilty, followed by my interview with the guitarist of Tora, Keith. So here we go.
Somebody save me, running for my life.
It's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and on the line we have from the band Tora Tora, Keith Douglas. Keith, how are you?
I'm great, Mark. How are you doing, man?
Oh, I'm great, and I'm very excited for your new album, which we're going to talk all about, The Bastards of Beale. It's out later this month. What I've heard sounds great, man. So let's talk about that in 1 minute. But first, I wanted to tell you that I had recently interviewed Eric Baker, who runs the M3 Rock Festival, and he told me that when we were going through the lineup, he told me that, well, the band Tora Tora, that he had so many people requesting in exit polling. I didn't know they did exit polling at M3, but apparently they do. And he told me that you guys were one of the most requested bands that he was hearing from the M3, you know, community that they wanted on the bill. So I didn't know if you knew that, but I wanted to say, hey, I'm totally excited to see you play at M3 this year. And
oh, great. You're going to make it.
Yeah. Cool. And B, just talk about your involvement with the festival.
Yeah, well, we're super excited to be on the bill this time around. You know, even back in the day when we did a lot of touring, I mean, Baltimore, that whole Northeast region, New York, Baltimore, D.C., that whole coast was always really, really a great place for us to play. You know, Baltimore especially, we used to play Hammerjacks there and I think we sold it out one time headlining. I mean, it's just nuts. So we've always had a really good, a really good turnout every time we've been to Baltimore. We were back. It's probably been a little bit over a year. We went back and played Baltimore and had a great time. And man, there were so many people. You know, we did a meet and greet, and it was just like endless line of people that were like, man, we've been waiting on you guys to come, you know, through Baltimore again for so long. So, and you know, of course, for the last 3 or 4 years, everybody's been saying, you know, you guys got to do M3. You guys got to do M3. So, you know, we're coming.
Awesome. Well, it's one of my favorite festivals. There's a handful of festivals that my wife and I do every year. But the thing we love most about M3 is there's just such a great community of people and fans and bands. And it's just such a great hang. And I'm so psyched you guys are going to be there this year. We'll be shooting video interviews down there. So I'd love to grab you for another 5 or 10 minutes backstage,
man,
at M3.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah, we would love to. And we're really looking forward to it. And, you know, we're also doing into this month, we're doing Monsters of Rock Cruise.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, a lot of those people are probably a lot of the same people that do M3. And, you know, and it's like a big community. It's like a big, you know, I get what you're talking about. I love that vibe, man, when everybody's, you know, kind of on the same page and a fan.
Yeah,
it just becomes,
man,
like kind of a brotherhood, you know?
It really is. People, you know, they put their politics, they put their favorite sports teams, they put everything aside, and they come together over this love of that genre of music, which you guys definitely were so good at delivering back in the day. And you are back with your first, I guess, new music in a long time, right? When's the last time Tora Tora released an album of new music?
Man, the last album we recorded was for A&M Records. It was in 94. The record was called Revolution Day, which they didn't even release. You know, and we were dropped from our label as well as, you know, basically everybody else was.
Right.
So that one kind of never saw the light of day for a long time until a few years back we released that on FNA Records out of Nashville.
Right on.
And but that was the last time, you know. This is the first time we've not only recorded, you know, it's the first time we wrote together in, you know, years and years and years. So we were extremely surprised and really, really happy and excited with what we were coming out with.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like when we got back together, Anthony and I, the singer, we do the bulk of the writing, and then we take our ideas to the other guys and we kind of finish them out all together. And he and I, you know, weren't real sure how it was going to go. And, you know, man, it was just like picking up right where we left off. So
awesome.
Super, super cool experience. And, you know, and the tunes just started coming and, you know, we're thrilled with how the record came out and with the songs. And we've got so much material. We had a hard time, you know, trimming it down to what was going to go on this record. So hopefully, you know, we've got a good head start on the next one.
Oh, that's awesome. And I will say that I had the opportunity to hear the record. John Freeman sent me over a link, and it is great, awesome, man. The thing that just struck me, besides the song structures and the hooks and the melodies, and I mean, you're the guitar guy. The guitars sound fantastic. I mean, in some ways.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, in some ways, man, even, you know, like a heavier sound in my opinion than, you know, the albums back in the day, like Surprise Attack and Wild America. I felt like the guitars were heavier and really in your face. So let me ask you, your actual tone, are you guys tuning down a little bit? Are you down to like an E flat or a D?
Yeah, we're down a half a step.
Half step. Okay.
From where we used to be.
Right. Okay.
You know, it helps along with, you know, just with Anthony's singing. And we started tuning down a while back for that reason. And, you know, a lot of people do that. And it's, you know, nobody's 20 years old anymore.
So, right. But I think it even adds to the heaviness of it.
Some of those notes are you know, kind of crazy.
Right.
But Anthony's so awesome, man. He does such a great job still. But we just kind of, you know, stayed in that, you know, half step down tuning. And then also on this album, we explored a lot with other drop tunings. We do a lot of stuff in open G, and then Anthony shows up. He's like the king of crazy tunings. And, you know, it drives me nuts because I'm like, man, how, you know, come on, Ant. But it's really wild. He shows up with like an open C tuning, which are, you know, a couple of songs on this album are actually in that tuning, and it's kind of wild, and it gives it a little different sound as well.
Cool. Well, I know there's two singles out now, which if the album isn't out by the time we post this, which it probably won't be, it'll probably be out in a week or two by the time we post this interview, people should definitely check out Silence the Sirens. That song is so good. I believe it's up on iTunes and Spotify right now. What's the tuning on that? Is that one of the ones with a odd tuning?
That is, man. Yeah. That's an open C tuning, which is, I don't know, man. It's kind of out there, but, you know, it lends to a really, really cool sound, you know, and certain scales and stuff work really well with it.
Very cool. And the guitar tone is coming. What kind of guitar are you using?
You know, I've just always had, and, you know, this is coincidental. It used to be a Strat. You know, my main guitar was a original Strat from the late 70s. That I got when I was probably, you know, 11 or 12 years old. And since it's just been through so many modifications, there's really nothing left of the original except for the body. And it's in the pickup. Man, I've got just a killer DiMarzio pickup in that. And it's just, I don't know, man. I've never come across another guitar that I can get that sound of.
Yeah.
Out of.
Is that a double coil or a single coil? Because Strats, Strats, you usually think of a single coil, but it sounds so big on the record that I was thinking it must be a double. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's just rocking straight through a Marshall, you know, and this record is so stripped down. I mean, it's pretty much raw. It's pretty much live. You know, we use zero click tracks. There's minimal overdubs whatsoever. You know, there's no keyboards, no extra percussion. There's really nothing on it. I mean, we basically hit the record button and just went for it.
And so, the album, guys, is called Bastards of Beale, and it is by Tora Tora. We're talking with Keith, the guitarist in the band. Keith, this is coming out through Frontiers. So what happened? Did you get a record together and then approach Frontiers, or did they kind of approach you and say, hey, how about a record?
Yeah, well, I mean, we had kind of, in passing, you know, talked about, you know, maybe we should try to write some new stuff sometime or do a project, you know, and I guess it was about a year and a half, a couple of years ago, Frontiers actually contacted me through social media. And you know, that was, and I knew of Frontiers, and I had always thought, man, that would be so cool to be able to work with them. I mean, they do such a great job, you know, to, in my opinion, just keeping rock alive, you know? So just with that coming around, it just kind of gave us, it helped us focus, you know, and right. set ourselves some kind of deadline. And we were like, man, let's do it, you know? And that really is what got us kicked into gear and moving on it.
Cool. And yeah. Let's talk about back in the day. I mean, you guys were, you know, you had the videos going on MTV, and you did a lot of touring too in the late 80s, yeah. early 90s. You guys toured with the Cult, right?
Yep. Yeah, we did. That was pretty awesome.
That was the Cult. And was Dangerous Toys on that build too?
Actually, when we were on that, the leg we were on was with Bonham.
Oh, Bonham. Wow.
Do you remember Bonham?
Of course, yeah. Cool. Yeah. What memories of that tour you could share with us?
That was the one tour that we did at arenas, you know, in and out. We actually got to play our arena here in Memphis, where I saw every concert I ever saw as a kid at the Mid-South Coliseum, which is now defunct. But, you know, they don't want to tear it down because the Beatles played there.
Oh, right.
So it's kind of just sitting there empty. But it was so cool and just such a, you know, mind blower for us to be playing, you know, those kind of buildings. And man, I just was in awe of the Cult, man. That was Sonic Temple, which I still love that album, top to bottom.
Great record, yeah.
You know, and I just every night after we played, you know, man, I would just grab a beer and sit on a road case, and I watched that show every night, you know, and I just enjoyed it, man. I loved it. I thought the whole thing at the time was just, you know, it was just electric, man.
Right.
The whole vibe.
Cool. And what other tours stand out as, you know, great tours that you had back in the day?
Probably the next one that would stick out in my mind that we were on a long time was, it was us and LA Guns and Dangerous Toys.
Okay.
And, man, we went all over the place on that one, and we were doing theaters. And that was a great time, man, because all three bands had pretty much put out a record right around the same time. That was, you know, it was Dangerous Toys' first record, and I think that was L.A. Guns. It was Cocked and Loaded.
Okay, cool.
Which is my favorite record of theirs, you know, so there's great songs on there. But that was a really great time, you know. Beyond that, we spent, gosh, I couldn't tell you how many times we crisscrossed the country just headlining clubs, you know, on our own. And that's really doing those longer headlining sets night after night is – I don't know. We've got, you know, you get a lot more seasoned doing that night in and night out than a, you know, as opposed to a half hour or 45 minute set as an opener.
Right on.
Yeah.
So, you know, Surprise Attack was, of course, 1989. And then Wild in America record hit in 1992. And, you know, it was a album that charted on the Billboard Top 200. But then that third album, as you mentioned, you recorded the whole album and it was done, ready to go. And then for whatever reason, the label drops you guys and it doesn't get released for literally decades later. I mean, that had to be a pretty rough blow to the band. Can you talk a little bit about that time period?
Yeah, it was such an odd time, and things were just changing, you know. I don't know if you remember, you probably do. I mean, it was just kind of overnight. Everything just changed, you know. And I don't know, with that album, I mean, they were contractually obligated to let us make it, which, you know, they fulfilled their end and paid and put out the record budget, and we did it and made it. But, you know, they didn't have to necessarily release it, so they didn't. And that just sat on the shelf, you know, for years and years and years until we released it through FNA.
Right on. Well,
so, yeah. But, you know, at the time, you know, it was just kind of time to move on. You know, after that, we kind of just took a break from it and went, you know, went on hiatus pretty much for a long, long, long time. And we kind of regrouped around, I guess it was 2008.
Right. So it was like a 15-year period, I would say.
Yeah, 14 years, something like that. I mean, we had played a little thing here or there. We did like a, you know, a fundraiser event for a guy we knew with health issues. So we would do just kind of, you know, or I popped in with Anthony and we did some acoustic stuff at a club or two. But, you know, beyond that, we were just kind of all on our separate ways, you know. And with different careers, and everybody started families, and you know how that goes. We just got busy.
And were you guys like doing jobs outside of the music business in that period?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I mean, so I worked with a family business for, gosh, the better part of 20 years.
Right.
And, but you know, and getting back together since then, just kind of hitting a festival here or there. But, you know, we just kind of got re-energized a couple of years ago. You know, our bass player, Patrick Francis, he had a cancer episode a couple of years ago.
He was
diagnosed with bladder cancer, which he's fine now, you know, and all good, you know, and we're so grateful for that. But it kind of gave us a whole new, I don't know, outlook, you know. It was like, you know, nobody's getting any younger, and we just enjoy playing together so much. And, you know, it's such a blast getting out there and playing and meeting the people like you're talking about at M3 that are still digging it. And it's, you know, it's a win-win for,
absolutely,
for everybody. So, you know, we want to do, you know, we're going to do it while we can do it. You know, nobody's itching to like jump in a van and, you know, cut across the country a few times, but we'll definitely weekend warrior it, you know, as long as somebody will have us.
Right on. And you mentioned the band is revitalized and it's a new era. And I think you can hear that energy and that excitement in the new record, Bastards of Beale, which will be out again later this month, guys, by Tora Tora. I highly recommend it. Really, you guys did a great job on it.
Man, thank you so much. I appreciate that. And you know, that means the most to hear it, you know, from guys like you and people who are familiar with us, you know, back in the day and you know, kind of kept up with us a little bit over the years. So we're super excited for everybody to hear it. And we just think everybody will be as excited as we are about the new tunes.
Cool. Well, I hope we get at least a couple new songs at M3. I mean, I of course, I want to hear all the old, you know, Phantom Rider and Walk and Shoes, all the old stuff. But I would love to hear a new song or two if you can slip those into the set list at M3.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm sure we'll have at least a couple in there.
Good.
But,
good.
You know, you've heard that. I've heard that old joke. I mean, what's the worst thing you can hear at a concert? Is here's one off of our new record.
Yeah. I get that, but I do think it is healthy not only for the bands to play a couple new songs, but also for the people in the audience to have some open ears and support what you guys are up to now, because again,
yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's a kick for us, you know, changing it up a little bit too. And we've had really great response so far, you know, pitching. We've thrown in two or three songs in the set and people seem to really dig them. So, you know, we're even looking more forward to once people have the record and are a little more familiar with the tunes. And I think they're just going to pop right in with the rest of them.
All right, cool. Well, thank you for your time, Keith. We appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Thanks, Mark. And we appreciate it, man. Give me a holler if you guys ever need anything.
A little brand new Tora Tora, Silence the Sirens. That sounds great. Keith, I cannot wait to see you at M3. Emily is psyched too. We're going to be doing interviews down there. You ready for some M3 fun?
I'm so ready. I wasn't there last year, but the year before I had just the time of my life.
Yeah, absolutely. And guys, join us on Patreon for exclusive content. There's polls going on there. There's pictures, there's videos that you don't get anywhere else. You get a first look at all our videos. There's an exclusive podcast. It is patreon.com/talkingmetal. Please join us there. So without further ado, let's talk to Michael, and he's going to tell us all about the Emerald Sabbath project or CD or album that's about to drop. Here we go.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel of the Talking Metal podcast, and we have a guy on who is responsible for doing something very cool, and it all has to do with Black Sabbath. He's going to tell us all about it. His name is Michael Suluan, and Michael, you're in the UK?
Yeah, that's right, mate. Hello, mate. Thanks for ringing. Yeah, I'm in Bristol in the UK, but I'm from Castletownbere in Ireland, in West Cork anyway, you know?
Right on.
But yeah, I'm in Bristol in the United Kingdom.
Well, we've been corresponding a little bit, and I know Ron Keel was on my podcast recently, and we really got Ron to talk about Sabbath and his involvement in this great project that you are doing. It's called Emerald Sabbath, the list of people, many of who are ex-Black Sabbath members participating in this this album is absolutely staggering. It's awesome. Let's talk about it. Just for anyone who doesn't know, can you explain what Emerald Sabbath is?
Emerald Sabbath is an idea I came up with on May 2015. I actually came up with the idea while I was watching Swan Lake, the Casco, in Bristol, because I love classical music as well. And I just decided, maybe to do changes with Black Sabbath in classical form and with Adam Waitman on keyboards. So I emailed Adam anyway on the off chance. This is May 2015, and Adam replied back to me. And he said he was in Argentina with Ozzy on tour. And he said, yeah, he'd be totally up for doing piano on changes for me when he gets back to the UK. And he did on May the 12th, 2015. Adam Waitman laid down the piano for changes. And he was the first person. And and after that, it was originally going to be one track, just a single. And then I realized, you know, I thought, I'm going to see how many ex-Black Sabbath members I can get, and I decided to do a track list, and that was it, really. And then I contacted Bev Bevan, and I told him Adam Waitman was on it, and Bev said okay, and then I contacted Vinny Appice, and Vinny said okay.
Wow.
And then I contacted Lawrence Cottle, and Lawrence Cottle said okay, and then I contacted Ron Keel, and Ron said okay, and then Dave Walker, and then Tony Martin, and there, and so on, and so on.
Yeah, you know? and it is very cool, because all these people have an association with Black Sabbath. I mean,
not forgetting Terry Chimes and as well, you know, from the 1989, and you know, it's not just the musicians as well; it's the graphic designers, the two guys from Technical Ecstasy, and the guy from Born Again, and string arrangers, you know, Will Malone and Mike Lewis, and yeah. So it's not just the musicians. A lot of the other people, string arrangers and graphic designers, are all ex-Black Sabbath as well, like, you know?
Right on. So I want to dive into this this list of people that are working on this album with you and have contributed to it. But first, when does the album come out, and where is the best place for the Talking Metal listeners to pick it up?
The single She's Gone was released on January the 11th, and it can be got download at Apple, Amazon, iTunes. And the album itself is out on February the 15th through Plastic Head Distributors.
Awesome.
So they're going to be the main distributors, Plastic Head, but it's again Amazon and iTunes and everything else. But yeah, Plastic Head Distributors are going to be the main distributors, and it's out on February the 15th, just about 2 weeks from now, like, you know?
Right, right, which it'll really probably only be about a week from now by the time we post this interview. Let's dive in. Adam Waitman, who, of course, is in Ozzy Osbourne's band currently. Sadly, yeah. The European tour was just postponed, I guess.
Yeah, but I heard that. He was on Sabbath's last final tour as well, like, you know?
Yeah, and I got to tell you, one of the coolest things that ever happened to me was Adam Waitman brought my wife and I backstage at Sabbath when they played in New Jersey on the Farewell Sabbath tour, and Adam with Sabbath he was playing guitar and doing keyboards. A lot of people don't know
that's
that
right.
He actually did play some guitar on that final
he
Sabbath
did,
tour
he did,
but he
did,
stood
he
off stage. He wasn't on stage. He was kind of on the side of the stage. Yeah,
That's correct. And on that subject, I've seen Black Sabbath 82 times, including the Forbidden Tour.
Wow.
And I've done one of the instrumentals on my album is dedicated to Jeff Nichols, who was going to play on the project before he sadly passed away from cancer.
Right.
And I saw Jeff Nichols on stage on the Forbidden Tour with playing rhythm guitar as well, mate.
Wow! Wow! Okay. So they,
as well as keyboard. So it wasn't so Jeff Nichols actually played rhythm guitar with and keyboards, you know, back in the day in the 90s, as well as Adam did as well. Like, you know.
Yeah! Wow! That's a little historical nugget there. It's very cool. And so Adam Wakeman, of course, the son of the great Rick Wakeman, who played the Sabbath Bloody Sabbath album. What song he's on? He's on
Sabracadabra.
Sabracadabra, right. Yeah, so great score with that. Let's move on. Bev Bevan. Now, he has an interesting place in Sabbath history. Let's talk about when he was in Sabbath and what he's doing on Emerald Sabbath.
Bev Bevan was in the – Bev was first at Black Sabbath in 1983 in the Born Again Tour. It was – he replaced Terry Chimes – who's probably best known for the punk band The Clash, but Terry was drumming with Black Sabbath. Terry, as you know, is an Emerald Sabbath as well. But Terry would not tour with Black Sabbath in South Africa because of the apartheid
thing. Wow.
And so they brought in Bev instead. So Bev toured the tour, did drums on the Born Again Tour, 1983. But he also did. He also guest this percussion on the Eternal Idol album.
Wow. Okay. So Born Again comes out. It's Gillan. Obviously, I'm a big fan of the Born Again record. But
it was Ian Gillan, Tony Iommi, Geezer Butler, and Bill Ward.
Right.
Bill did the drums on the album, but on the tour it was Bev Bevan on the tour, right, you know?
But so Terry did a handful of dates with them before
Terry Chimes did a handful of dates, yeah, but Terry wouldn't play in South Africa with Black Sabbath, apparently, because of the apartheid.
Wow, and Terry, of course, was in The Clash. He was in The Clash at the beginning of their kind of run, and then I think he joined them for that final tour, right, when they toured with The Who, is that correct?
That's correct. Terry is still doing drums, actually. But Bev then went on to the second time Bev was with Sabbath was he did guest percussion on the Eternal Idol album.
Right, cool. So Bev Bevan, then, who I know when they toured America, I believe Bev Bevan was playing drums with Sabbath when they were touring for the Born Again record. Now, he is also, a lot of people might not know this, or they might know this, he's a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, right? With ELO,
yeah.
He was inducted into the Hall of Fame.
That's correct.
Maybe known even more for his work with ELO. I would say definitely known more for his work with ELO than Sabbath.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. When it comes to listings with Bevan, it's ELO, The Move, Black Sabbath, you know?
So what is he doing on Emerald Sabbath? What is Bev doing?
He's doing a fair bit, actually. After Adam Wakeman did change piano and changes, I had the violin player come in and all that. So but Bev is doing percussion on changes.
Cool.
That's the first thing he did. And then as the album accumulated and I got more members and more tracks and whatnot, Bev is also playing percussion on Thrashed.
Nice, cool.
And he's playing percussion on Embryo Intro. Percussion, Changes percussion, but he's playing drums on Changes. Percussion on Embryo Intro and percussion on Thrashed. Yeah,
nice. Cool. And you mentioned Terry, who's involved. We heard from Ron Keel, who went into great detail on a previous episode of Talking Metal about his involvement. But so let's talk about some of these other people. Vinnie Appice, who has such a unique place in Sabbath history because...
Oh, my God.
You know,
yeah.
There was... He didn't play on Heaven and Hell. He joined for the tour, though, and then Mob...
That's
the,
right.
right. The Mob Rules record. Then he
and the band Heaven and Hell as well.
Yeah, came back for Dehumanizer when they did that in the 90s with
Dio.
Right. Then, of course, he was back with Heaven and Hell, which in a lot of people's mind is basically Sabbath, you know, but they didn't want to call it that for, you know, whatever reason. But he also, and I know you're a Sabbath expert, so you probably know this, he did a brief amount of dates with Ozzy, Tony, and Geezer in the lineup. And I guess that was when Bill Ward was not well enough to play.
That's correct. He did, yeah. He did. The exact dates, those dates, I'm not exactly sure right off my head, but I know he definitely did the Heaven and Hell tour anyway, and the Headless and the Heaven and Hell with Ronnie and all that afterwards. But he did step in and do some live shows as well.
Yeah, he did some. He definitely played some live shows, and I know he was actually touring with Sabbath. And just was kind of waiting in the wings because they weren't sure about Bill's health and about Bill's ability. And he's told stories to me about the fact that he was touring with them. And, you know, he didn't know if he was going to play, but he was always ready to go. And at one point, he actually did have to step in for Bill for a number of dates.
If I look into my archives, I've got everything, information everywhere from day one. Like, so, but yeah, you're correct, you know, but with Emerald Sabbath, Vinny is playing drums on Die Young and drums on Thrashed.
Nice, nice. And those are those with Ron on vocals, Ron Keel?
Yeah, Ron singing both Thrashed and Die Young, yeah. And
wow.
But Ron's also doing Hole in the Sky, who's got Bobby Rondinelli on drums, and you know?
Wow, wow, cool. This is.
And I've also got Bobby Rondinelli on In for the Kill, with Tony Martin on vocals and Adam Wynn. In for the Kill lineup is quite good lineup, actually. It's Tony Martin on vocals, Lawrence Cottle on bass from Headless Cross album, Pete Rinaldi, who's Adam Wakeman's guitar player, Bobby Rondinelli and Adam himself, like, you know?
Wow, that is awesome. Let's talk about Dave Spitz. Can you tell us a little about, first about his history with Black Sabbath and then his what he's doing on Emerald Sabbath?
Dave is not actually on the album that's coming out, unfortunately.
Oh, he's not. I thought he was for some reason. Sorry.
Dave, as you know, I've done In for the Kill with Tony Martin on vocals and Lawrence Hutton on bass. And Dave, as you know, played the original bass on In for the Kill.
Right.
With Glenn Hughes and Eric Singer and all that. But I was. We'd all things set up, but the thing is with Dave was it's a timing issue, like, you know, it's just a pure timing issue.
Okay,
and nothing else. But listen, I've got a 4-track follow-up EP already in the pipeline.
Wow.
Called Volume 2, and there's members of Black Sabbath who's not on this album that's going to be on the EP. So I'm just trying to let you know that, like, you know.
That sounds great.
Dave Spitz was on In for the Kill album, definitely. One of my favorite Sabbath albums of all time.
How about
Seven Star? Like,
yeah, absolutely. Neil Murray, he is doing some bass on Emerald Sabbath.
Neil's doing bass on the instrumental Orchid. And he's doing bass on She's Gone with Dave Walker got on vocals, the single, like, you know?
Right, which is out now. It's a great music video,
which we will link. Which is out now, yeah. Dave Walker on vocals, Chris Cundy, Bill DeWire. Chris Cundy and Bill DeWire, both members of Dave Walker's band. Neil Murray on bass. Mike Lewis, the string arrangement. Mike Lewis did the original string arrangement for the Black Sabbath one as well, mind.
Right, cool.
And I've got a string quartet, and Jeremy Lewis produced it, who produced the Headless Cross album. He produced that track, like, you know?
Now, you mentioned Dave Walker, who, again, is doing She's Gone on the album. He's a very unique player in Sabbath history because he stepped in when Ozzy quit. Now, this was before the official kind of breakup, before Never Say Die, right? When actually did this happen? Was this after Technical Ecstasy?
1978 it happened, because, as you said, the official one was 1980 when the late Ronnie James Dio joined. But there was a brief moment in 1978 when Dave was a member of Black Sabbath, he did some recording with them, definitely. And it was in, I'll tell you where, yeah, November, my memory's coming back to me. November 1977 it was.
Right.
And, you know, because they come from, Dave come from the same part of Birmingham as Tony Iommi and Ozzy. He's a Brummie lad himself, like, you know?
Yeah. And you know, there's actually,
and he was,
oh, go ahead.
He actually did a recording, an early recording of Junior's Eyes,
yeah,
which is completely different to the Junior's Eyes on the album version, you know?
Right.
There is video footage, a TV program called BBC West Midlands, Look Here. Sixth of January 1978, he performed War Pigs and Junior's Eyes on TV.
And
there's footage of it, like, you know?
So that footage is out there? Because I was looking for that. I couldn't find it on YouTube.
It's near impossible to get hold of.
Right, right.
There is footage. You have to contact the BBC Midlands TV program. It's called Look Here, and it was in 1978. But there is, I've got still images. You can see them on my website from that performance, you
right
know.
On.
But to actually get the video footage, the actual footage itself is no easy feat. Like, you have to contact BBC or contact Black, Mr. Iommi himself, like, you know. But it
right
does
on
exist anyway, so, you know.
Cool. Well, this release, again, is Emerald Sabbath. Guys, it'll be out February 15th, and you got to pick it up. It is, there's so much great stuff, and it's all, you know, authentic, true Sabbath from start to finish, from the artwork to the musicians involved in it, to even the woman playing the harp. Let's talk about her. You sent me some footage. It's just awesome. You got tell me her name and what she's doing.
Her name is Skyla Kanja, originally Indian, and she works with Massive Attack recently and all that. But she was a session harp player with Black Sabbath in the mid 70s.
Wow. So she's on the Sabotage record? Is that what she's on?
She can't remember.
Wow, okay.
She went into the studio to play harp for Black Sabbath, and Ozzy was there, and she did harp. But the thing is, with my version of Superstar, because you know on the Sabotage album, it was Will Malone who did the string arrangement there. Yeah?
Right, who also does the string arrangement on for some of your songs, right?
He did the string arrangement for my Superstar as well.
That's awesome.
But in Waterton rewriting it, he found the original up in his attic from 1975 that was scrawled with Ozzy. And Ozzy wanted to call Superstar, "We serve the worst chips in the country." And they said, "No, you can't call it that. We call it Superstar." But I've got the original one here that Will Malone found. But the girl who's playing Superstar at the harp on my Superstar is... I cannot confirm or deny if she played harp on the Sabotage album.
Right, okay.
But she definitely 100% played with Black Sabbath in the 70s as a session harp player. That's without a shadow of a doubt. Like,
awesome.
She may have played on the Sabotage album and never got credit for it, but even she can't remember, like, you know?
Yeah, I hear you.
I've got Mike Lewis, the original string arranger, that did the original She's Gone on Technical Ecstasy. He's done mine. And the graphic designers,
cool. Well, it's a very exciting project, and Michael, I'm sorry, but we're just about out of time. But before we let you go, I wanted to just ask you real quick, what is your favorite Sabbath record, and what is your least favorite Sabbath record?
My favorite, well, it's obvious I'm going to answer my favorite. I love them all.
Okay.
My favorite Sabbath record, it's near impossible to answer, but I do love Seventh Star and Born Again, and I do love Sabotage, so there's three there. The least one, if you mean it's the least one I listen to, is 13.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. That's interesting. Seven Star, because I've a lot of people I've heard kind of pan that record as not one of the better Sabbath records.
I know it's different. You know, it's a different one from the 70s. But if you're talking Aussie era, it's Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, and Sabotage, like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Sabotage for me too.
I haven't got a best or a favorite. I'll just say the ones I listen to least and most.
Right on. Cool. Well, yeah. I know one thing. We're all going to be listening to Emerald Sabbath. It's out February 15th, and it is a true Sabbath tribute in every way you can imagine, because it's really people who are part of the Sabbath family are a part of this record in every step along the way, from artwork to musicianship. And it sounds great, and I can't wait for the Talking Metal listeners to hear this.
Cool.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you very much for ringing, and yeah, no problem whatsoever. I hope you enjoy it when it comes out, and hope that everyone else does as well.
I've been gone a long, long time, waiting for you. I didn't want to see you go.
Was in Sabbath when Ozzy first quit So, you know, Ozzy left the band, like, before they got Dio, before Never Say Die. It's a little known fact that Ozzy left for a couple months. They brought in this guy, Dave Walker, did some songwriting with him, did a TV show appearance, and then Ozzy came back and they did the Never Say Die record.
Wow,
so that is Dave Walker singing She's Gone, which was a song on Technical Ecstasy. Very interesting version of She's Gone. Definitely very different than the way Sabbath did it, but still very, very cool. And Emerald Sabbath is coming out soon, guys. So we definitely will be talking more about this great album on future episodes of Talking Metal. And that's going to do it. I'm trying to think. Oh, let's hit a request on the way out. This is one of our Patreon guys, Emily. His name's Steven Saylor, and he is really supportive. And I do want to mention that the Patreon people, the sweatshirts are coming in. So if you go to that higher tier, you can get a Talking Metal sweatshirt. Even if you just move there for a month, the sweatshirt will be mailed out. And let's actually do this. We'll do it right now. I know it's expensive, guys, but I paid $70 for a Black Sabbath hoodie at the farewell tour for Black Sabbath.
Did you see there's Kiss t-shirts going for $100?
Yeah. Yep. So we're going to sell
cuckoo. That's cuckoo town, though. Come on.
And I know this is cuckoo town, and you're going to be mad at me, but these hoodies cost me a ton. They really do.
I know they did.
So listen, you got to look at it as you get a Talking Metal hoodie, but you're also supporting the show. They're $80, guys. Let me know if you want a Talking Metal hoodie. You don't have to be on Patreon. You can get a one-time purchase of a Talking Metal hoodie for $80. If there's any interest out there, hit up my PayPal with $80, your shirt size, your address. We have smalls through double XLs. I don't have the triple XLs. And those are Talking Metal hoodies, and it really supports what we're doing here. And if you knew how much I was paying to have these made, you wouldn't be that shocked at an $80 price tag for the hoodies. And I'd love to give you one. So hit me up, guys, if you want one. And that's going to do it for today. This is requested by Steven Saylor. It's Path of Destiny by Pink Cream 69. This came out in 2017. It's a great tune. As always, Steven's picking out some really great songs to play here on the Talking Metal podcast, and we appreciate his input into the show. Thanks, Steven. Here we go. Path of Destiny by Pink Cream 69.